course, when a drought came in, so forth, and Israel didn't believe, well, then they began getting warm. And so that's the reason why Paul take them a collection for them. The children of the highest. There's a little expression. The highest. It says a figure here in your note. You know about the highest name that we have, the greatest name we have for God in the Old Testament is Jehovah Elion, which means Jehovah, the Most High God. Now, I'm not saying that that is the final great name of given, because our Lord has had a name given to him and isn't revealed. For the church, which is his body, there's also a name which he will have. No one knows it himself when he appears in the heavens in Revelation 19. I'm kind of curious about his name. Have been for many years. Wondering just what it might be. Of course, it may be that we will have to graduate from the school of hard knocks and so on, have a resurrection before we can even appreciate it or know what it is. And that seems to be indicated especially in Philippians, because when God is all and in all, there are no sin, death, or sinners or anything of the kind left, then he'll be given a name which is above every name and every knee bow and every tongue confess. There won't be anybody to object. There won't be anybody left to object. It will be there. Yeah, that's right. You see, the Lord cannot receive praise from unbelievers or demons or anything of the kind. Well, I see the time is up here for this particular section of it, so we'll have to leave off here. See, that's ready for verse 36 for the next time. So we'll start over then in Luke, or in Acts. And we're ready to start the 9th chapter. Wait a minute here. No, we're down to 9:32, aren't we? Yes, 9:32. Well, his 9th chapter of Acts is quite a turning point. Paul has quite an experience here, more than one. It's strange, though, that we don't have any record after Paul's experience in Damascus, after the 3 years. We don't have any record that he went about with a great sermon on Over the Wall in a Basket. He could have capitalized on that, probably. Or having been taken out of Jerusalem by night, had to get out because they were plotting against him, and his disciples took him over to Caesarea and put him on a ship and sent him home. Tarsus. Well, we're talking about Peter here, and in verse 32, Paul was left for just a little bit. And it came to pass, as Peter passed through all quarters, throughout all quarters, he came down also to the saints which dwelt at Lydda. Now, Lydda is a little town almost straight west of Jerusalem, not too far from the seashore, just about what you call two jumps and a holler from Lydda to Joppa. Something like that. But there were some saints there, believers. Now, probably they were believers living there because we had had this little dispersion after the death of Stephen. And you see, this is, if this is taking along in the time here, that is, if Peter does this after Paul had come back to Jerusalem and then gone, of course, we're not too sure whether this is after or whether it's contemporaneous. But we just might guess it's because of this dispersion, because of the persecution that they might be there. Although we know the word spread, and so we don't have to use that as an explanation. And there he found a certain man named Aeneas. That sounds very Greek, doesn't it? In fact, there's a book written in Greek about Aeneas, you know, called Virgil's Aeneid, by a man. Even Queen Dido couldn't see him. A lot of youngsters today are missing a whole lot because they don't get that. Usually we used to teach that in fourth year Latin in high school. Virgil's Aeneid, wandering Aeneas. And they don't get that today, they're missing something. And this man Aeneas had kept his bed 8 years and was sick of the palsy. That is, he was paralyzed. Doesn't say the shaking palsy or something like that, he was just paralyzed. And Peter said unto him, Aeneas, if you'll just believe, Jesus Christ will make thee whole. Well, I have to watch to see if people keep awake, you know. I just made this modern, didn't I? Now, listen. Let's don't modernize this. Let's take it just the way it is. And Peter said unto him, Aeneas, Jesus Christ maketh thee whole. Arise and make thy bed. And he arose immediately. Didn't take him 2 or 3 days, a couple of months, or whatever. Immediately. And immediately means right now. Not sometime in the future. Now, when they had the gifts, that's the way things work. Of course, now, if the church had begun here with the conversion of Paul here in Acts, well, then Peter couldn't have done this. Right? Because we don't have the gifts connected to the church or to the body of Christ. Well, be that as it may, we could spend a long time here picking out things like that. And maybe not to do much profit. And all that dwelt at Lydda and Saron, I couldn't even find Saron on the map, saw him and turned to the Lord. Probably was a village very near. Now we change the scene a little bit. Now there was at Joppa, which was nearby, a certain disciple named Tabitha, which by interpretation is called Dorcas. Well, it just happens to me, and it happens to be that both of them mean gazelle. Tabitha being the Hebrew form, and Dorcas being the Greek form. And this woman was full of good works and alms deeds which she did. In other words, she was one that helped the poor. Of course, when we understand that they were her neighbors and believers, said a lot of saints at Lydda, so probably there were at Joppa also. And it came to pass in those days that she was sick and died. Whom, when they had washed, they laid her in an upper chamber. And forasmuch as Lydda was nigh to Joppa, and disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent unto him 2 men, desiring him that he would not delay to come to them. Oh, she's dead. What's the use of having him come over there now? Had Peter done any raising of the dead before this? No record, is it? I wonder what made them think that Peter could raise the dead, or if that was in their mind. Or what they sent for him, why they wanted to come over to Joppa. You see, you can't ask too many questions. You may not find all the answers, but then you can't ask too many questions. Oh, Maybe get a funeral to preach, huh? I don't know, I might get $25 or $50 out of it. Yeah. I don't know what the going rate is. I don't get many of them. Just as well. Well, at any rate, two men went over there to Lydda and asked Peter if he was going to come over right away to Joppa. Now, who was it that went down to Joppa many years before? Jonah. And he went down into the ship. He went down into the big fish. Down, down. Then he come up. No, the fish couldn't stomach a backslidden preacher. Well, now this is where Peter is going down to Joppa. And do you know that Peter's name was really Jonah? Simon Bar Jonah. Simon, son of Jonah. Bar means son. What a connection. Joppa? Jonah? I hope this doesn't prove to be a Jonah for Peter. As we would say, today's slang. Then Peter rose and went with them. And when he was come, they brought him into the upper chamber. And all the widows stood by him weeping, and showing the coats and garments as Dorcas made while she was with him. Now you know Peter does a daring thing here. How does he know he's going to be able to do this? Right. He was working under God's direction, or I would say this, as the first verse of Acts tells, that this was, and as it says there, Jesus working through Peter. Because the Lord was still going on doing the things and saying the things which he had said before and done before. And instead of being the Acts of the Apostles, I would say it's the Acts of the Lord. I think that is a little point we miss these days. Too many of us get so busy doing something for the Lord, where we should be making ourselves available and let him do his work. And sometimes we frustrate him, we push him aside and let me do it. You know, we can do it better than he can and so on. We know better. We can make our own blueprints. We are do-gooders and all that sort of thing. But of course, you know, the hardest thing in the world is to wait on God. Just can't do it. You see, Abraham couldn't, and he got in a peck of trouble. And you can go back and see some others. And Jacob, he just couldn't wait on God either. And he got spanked around until he was practically in his 90s before he ever really knuckled down and got his name changed and became God's name. That took him all a lifetime around. Over 90 years that weren't a lesson. And a lot of us aren't going to live long enough to learn a lesson like he did. Those are good things to think on, because I am afraid that today that there is just so much of this doing good, and making our plans, and all too often making expensive plans and then hoping the Lord will turn us to do-re-mi. Well, if he makes the plans and he does the work, he'll furnish that. You don't have to worry about it. Well, but Peter put them all forth and kneeled down and prayed. And turning to the body, he said, Talitha, arise. And she opened her eyes. And when she saw Peter, she sat up. I bet she was surprised. Can you imagine yourself in her place? She'll die. And then wake up. And the man in the room sitting by. Or if she'd seen Peter before, I don't know. but she knew something had happened. And he gave her his hand and lifted her up, and when he had called the saints, widows, presented her alive. And it was known throughout all Joppa. Well, certainly it would. Something like this. And many believed in the Lord. And it came to pass he had tarried many days in Joppa at a Ramadi inn. Or was it a holiday? The chances are that Peter just wasn't too popular with some of these folks for some reason or other, and maybe this was the only place that he could stay. You see, a tanner was counted as unclean. He was handling the hide of dead animals, and that made a man unclean. Yeah. So I think here's the beginning of a lesson this week. He stopped down here in the house at one time on the tanner. Yes, you see, Israel were never to touch a carcass of an unclean animal. Not a dog or a cat. And yet we find one of the judges that did the forbidden thing. And he did touch the carcass of an unclean animal. Now, who was it? One of the judges. Find this in the book of Judges. And afterwards he put forth a riddle. That sweetness came forth from the eater. Catch on? You remember, Jim? He met a lion in the way and grabbed it and pulled its jaws apart and killed it. That's the lion. When he came back, a swarm of bees had gotten into it and made honey. And he took honey out of that carcass. Made it. Well, who was it? Yeah, same thing. Yeah. There's. He was a Nazarite, and above all men, he was to not touch anything unclean, and yet he did. Samson was, you know, a chisel in lots of ways. Yet God used him to bring vengeance upon the Philistines because of the way they treated Israel. So Simon the Tanner, he'll know a little bit more about the law and how they abhorred that because of their law and so on. Like they found a dead mouse in the house, they wouldn't pick it up in the floor. They'd have to have something to pick it up, put it in the dustpan or something, not touch it. Yes, now, you see, you could touch the dead. You could bury the dead, except in the case of the Levites. And they had to hire somebody to bury their dead because they were busy with the Lord's business and they would have to go through a purification last a few days and soon they'd be off duty. So in your law, ceremonial law in the Old Testament, Levite was not to touch a dead soul. A soul. He touched. Well, I just wanted to get this uncleanness business here sort of emphasized. There was a certain man in Caesarea. Now, that's up the coast north of Joppa. And a pretty good little journey. And that man's name was Cornelius. And, of course, we notice in the IUS that it's a Roman name. Latin. A centurion. And what's a century? 100? All right, he was a centurion, therefore he had a band of 100 men under him. He was a centurion of the band called the Italian Band. So evidently they'd been recruited somewhere around Rome, in Italy. A devout man, just think here, a man who's a warrior, a centurion, and he's an Italian, a heathen. and is a devout man, and one that feared God with all his house. Not only he, but his house. That did include his immediate family and also his servants. Now, whether it included his 100 men, that I'm not sure about. I just am inclined to think maybe not. I used to think maybe so. But I hardly think that they were included in his house. And he gave much alms to the people. Now, I wish that they had put that in the capital there, like they do when it occurs another time over here. I forget which verse it is. I will get to it after a while, maybe. Because it's really meaning the Jews. Although the word laos, from which you get the word laity, is the Greek word used, and the Nicolaitans that God hated over in the book of Revelation are those who lorded it over the laity of the common people. So there's the usage of your word. And he prayed to God always. He prayed to God. He wasn't praying through a mediator. He didn't know anything about it. He saw in a vision, evidently or plainly, about the ninth hour of the day. The ninth hour of the day would be about what time in the day? About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, right. An angel of God coming into him and saying unto him, Cornelius. And when he looked on him, he was afraid and said, What is it, Lord? And he said unto him, Thy prayers and thine alms are come up for a memorial before God. And now send men to Joppa, and call for one Simon, whose surname is Peter. He lodgeth with one Simon a canner, whose house is by the seaside. He shall tell thee what thou oughtest to do. Now notice the directions. Notice how that God, on both sides, organizes this meeting. He appears to Cornelius, and he appears to Peter, both, and arranges the meeting, because he has something important here to do. He said his prayers and his alms had come up before a memorial. Now you see, it's in the opposite order in what it is in verse 2. It's the alms and the prayers. Here it's the prayers and the alms. I come up for a memorial before God. I kind of like that word memorial because, you see, in John 5, 28 and 9, we have those that are in the graves. That's memorial, supplication. And it means those that's in God's remembrance. In other words, those in the book of life. And Job had said, Thou wilt remember me. Or that thou would remember me. And when he called, he would answer. So it's the memory. You see, a lot of people try to take that literally. And just as sure as they do, get right back into the old Egyptian heathen religion. That only those who have a proper burial are resurrected. Because it says all in the grave, you see there in John, here you go. So they have to have a proper burial if they want to take that thing literally like that. But it doesn't mean that. All of those are in his memory. The word is a word for memory. And so the tomb is a remembrance place, you see, but using the word memory. So all of those are in God's memory will rise. Both the good and the bad. Believers. Well, I just couldn't help but bring that up because here is a memorial. God is remembering Cornelius for his prayers and his alms. Cornelius must have been a very sincere man. And probably all he knew is what he had probably heard as a visitor in the synagogue, but it doesn't tell us that he ever visited the synagogue. But how else could he have learned about this? Unless some of the proselyters went out and and got Airstream. Of course, you know, the Jews are pretty good at that. They like to get all the proselytes they could, get them circumcised, and along with their religion. You didn't know what they were evangelical on their efforts, did you? Well, they were. And the Lord once said, you know, it's these Pharisees that what all they do to get a proselyte, making a worse devil than themselves. That was a rub. And when the angel which spake unto Cornelius was departed, he, that is Cornelius, called two of his household servants, notice, two of his household servants, and a devout soldier of them that waited on him continually. So evidently some of his soldiers came into his household and did odd jobs and so on. And when he declared all these things, that is what he had seen, what he had heard unto them, he sent them to Joppa. So he sends three men to Joppa, a soldier and two servants. It must not have been too bad a road, or that small a band couldn't have gone unless they did join themselves with others, as was a custom in those days. You didn't go out alone on those roads in those days any more than you go out alone on the streets of Washington, D.C. No different. Just as dangerous. On the morrow, as they went on their journey and drew nigh unto the city, Peter went up on the housetop to pray about the sixth hour, noon. And he became very hungry. I don't know, maybe they delayed the noon meal a little bit or something, I don't know. Maybe they got mixed up in the kitchen. And would have eaten, he'd like to have eaten. But while they made ready, he fell into a trance. It doesn't mean he fell to a trance. He fell into a trance. That is a dream or something of that kind. And saw heaven opened. I didn't know heaven was closed. But he saw heaven open. Oh, that's right. You go back in the Old Testament and you find there are windows in heaven. Don't you? That's right. And John in the Revelation saw a door of heaven open, didn't he? Well, I guess maybe this is right. See how little things can come to your mind when you read something like that? And so he saw heaven open, and a certain vessel descending unto him, as it had been a great sheet, knit or fastened at the four corners, and let down to the earth. Wouldn't that be a sight? A great big sheet. Something bigger than the sails off of a boat. Something pretty large. Had to be. Wherein are all manner of four-footed beasts of the earth, and wild beasts, and creeping things, and fowls of the air. My, what a jumbled up mess that was. And it just sounds like about all of them were unclean, doesn't it? See, now, what was a clean beast? Anybody give me a definition? Cloven hoof? And what? Yeah, you should look over here. You could have found out. Sure. We had the hint. You weren't looking. Now, you see, we have some which are half. Now, the rabbit chews a cud, but it doesn't have a cloven hoof. So it doesn't qualify, does it? And a hog has a cloven hoof, but doesn't chew the cud. Well, you'll have to cross the hog and the rabbit to get a clean beef. Well, I just keep those things in mind because that was God's definition, and those could be used for food, and also certain of them could be used for sacrifice. And there were also clean and unclean fowls. I just hear the fellow's invented a new chili con carne. He calls it vulture's breath. That's appetizing, isn't it? That's the world for you today. That's Texas for you. That's going on down in Texas. Unclean. Well, that isn't very edifying, but nevertheless, we have to know what's going on about us sometimes too. And there came a voice to him, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." And Peter said, "Not so, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that's common or unclean." Not about to begin it now. And this was done 3 times. And the vessel was received up again into heaven. And now while Peter doubted in himself what his vision, which he had seen, should mean, and I think he would do some thinking, see something like this from heaven, and a voice saying to kill and eat, the very opposite of what the law was and what he had been accustomed to. He would wonder, what in the world is this about? And so when he was thinking about that, behold, the men which were sent from Cornelius had made inquiry for Simon's house and stood before the gate. See the timing? Perfect. And called and asked whether Simon, which was surnamed Peter, were lodged there. And while Peter thought on the vision, the Spirit said unto him, "Behold, 3 men seek thee. Arise, therefore, and get thee down, and go with them, doubting nothing, for I have sent them." And he would know immediately who the I was. What was the Spirit speaking to him? Well, Simon Bar-Jonah, I think, is a little bit more obedient than Jonah was. Peter's learned a lot since that night he denied the Lord. And Peter went down to the men which were sent unto him from Cornelius and said, "Behold, I am he whom ye seek. What is the cause wherefore ye are come? What do you want?" And they said, "Cornelius the centurion, a just man." Now, just a minute. Does that mean that he was justified before God, or does it mean something else? How is the word just and unjust used in the Bible? According to him, is it a man's state, or is it his standing? Which does it have to do with? This has been a great mix-up for us. If a man is just, is it his standing or his state? Right. Has to do with his works, his walk. That's right. And to try to make a justification in the life or something like that, this word isn't used that way. Yeah. And believers can be just and unjust. And don't be so naive to think that believers can't be unjust. I've met a number of them. And you probably have too sometimes. You have a little business dealing with them and so on, you know, you'll find out. But this man was a just man. In other words, he was living what he professed. Let's put it that way. Well, and one that feareth God. Now, that word fear is going to come up again in this same chapter when Peter starts preaching. Now, it doesn't mean to be afraid of, to be scared of. It means to reverence. And remember that the only thing that's reverend in the Bible is the name of God. And a good report among all the nation of the Jews. A good report, had a good reputation. was warned from God by an holy angel to send for thee into his house and to hear words of thee. Well, they got their story straight. They did just what Cornelius told them to do. Then he, that is Peter, then called he them in and lodged them. And on the morrow Peter went away with them, and certain brethren from Joppa accompanied him. Now you'll find later there were three of these Jews that came with him. That's a pretty good thing. There were witnesses, because you remember Peter had to account for his actions later before the church in Jerusalem. And he just had three good witnesses there to tell what happened here at the house of Cornelius. He hadn't. Peter had been really in a bad fix there. And the morrow after, they entered into Caesarea. So it's a good day's journey, if not more, the way they traveled in. Of course, you can zip that in a car now pretty quickly. And Cornelius waited for them and had called together his kinsmen and near friends. He just had a house full here to greet Peter when he came. He was expecting some great things. Well, he should. When the Lord took all the trouble to appear to him and talk to him about and tell him about this, he should be looking for something. And as Peter was coming in, Cornelius met him and fell down at his feet and worshipped him. Well, now, Peter must be some great personage, maybe one of the gods or something. Cornelius wasn't altogether instructed. But Peter took him up, saying, "Stand up. I myself also am a man." Reminds me of what the angel said to John, you know, in the Revelation. And as he talked with him, as Peter talked with Cornelius, he went in and found many that were come together. And he said unto them, now he would never have said this if the church had begun at Pentecost. "We know how that it is an unlawful thing for a man, that is a Jew, to keep company or come into one of another nation. But God has showed me in his vision that I should not call any man common or unclean." Any man. He didn't say beast. He said man. So Peter understood what that vision was about. It was simply to tell Peter that in God's sight, men were not common or unclean. "Therefore came I unto you without gainsaying." He didn't talk back to God about it. Now remember that Moses did a little gainsaying when God called him for his mission. He says, "I can't talk." God got a little put out with him. Had Aaron, his brother, then to be his mouthpiece for him, you know. And of course, that later on caused trouble. Aaron had better been out of it. And Miriam, too. Why, you can get in a lot of trouble with your relatives sometimes, can't you? Well, that's just on the side. "Therefore came I unto you without gainsaying, as soon as I was sent." And now he asks a question. "For what intent? I ask therefore, for what intent you sent for me?" Now, Peter should have known if the church began at Pentecost. He should have known that he should go here and speak to the Gentiles as well as Jews. No? Wouldn't it be strange today for a missionary to go out on the field and say, "Well, what am I here for? What do you want me?" That's strange. This is something new, absolutely, for Peter. And remember, this is pretty close 8 years after Pentecost. And Cornelius said, "4 days ago I was fasting until this hour, and at the ninth hour I prayed in my house, and behold, a man stood before me in bright clothing, and said, Cornelius, thy prayer is heard, and thine alms are had in remembrance. There it is again. In the sight of God. Remembrance. Send therefore to Joppa, and call hither Simon, whose surname is Peter. He is lodged in the house of one Simon the tanner to the seaside, who, when he cometh, shall speak unto thee. Immediately, therefore, I sent to thee, and thou hast done well to our come. Now, therefore, are we all here present before God to hear all things that are commanded thee of God? In other words, he's telling Peter to tell him what God has said. You know, I wish that churches would make a demand like that today. Of course, it would run some of the preachers out, I suppose. Some couldn't do it. But my, if they just demand that they speak what God has to say, we'd have something going. Then Peter opened his mouth and said, of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. But in every nation, he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted with him. Feareth him. Now, if he fears him and reveres him, he evidently believes. And if he believes and acts upon that belief, then he has faith. Is that right? Isn't faith believing and acting upon it? I think that's the way it's defined, at least in chapter 11 of Hebrew. That seems to be the emphasis all the way through it. These great heroes and heroines of faith believed what God said and acted on it. They followed out James' idea that faith without works is dead, you see. So they produced the works that faith would bring. I know a lot of people want to leave off that. And all too often you hear them quoting Ephesians 2, 9 and 10, or 8 and 9, to leave the 10th verse off. And yet that is the goal of the whole thing. Created in the good works, which are before ordained at God's name, that we should walk in. Now, Peter says here, in every nation, he that feareth him, that is God, and worketh righteousness, is accepted with him. And from the testimony we have here, this is exactly what Cornelius had done. He feared God, and he worked righteousness. Yeah. Right. Right. All our righteousnesses are filthy rags. That's this do-gooder business we're talking about. I don't know whether you ever heard the sermon on John 3:16 by Major Thomas. Mm-hmm. That's a good one. I have it here on tape. I've had it for years. Sent to me from England by Arthur Rumsey. And he stresses a great deal of this very thing. That he had himself had to go through that experience. He had made all his plans. He's going to be a missionary to Africa and went to medical school and all of that sort of thing and so on. And he came to the end of his rope. And that's where God wanted him. Then God used him. And he didn't go to Africa as a missionary either. God had something else better for him to do. And he has been a power in his particular field. I don't know how much right division he knew. He'd been exposed to it. I know that. And had friends among the right dividers. The word which God sent unto the children of Israel, preaching peace by Jesus Christ, he is Lord of all. Oh my. There's a lot in here. The word is logos. As you find in John 1:1. You see, we also have a word, translated word, rhema, which means saying and so on, but this is logos. And the Greek philosophers had quite a play upon this word logos, and that's one of the reasons probably why it's used in John 1:1. The word which God sent unto the children of Israel, so evidently here it was the message sent, and not particularly referring to Christ himself. Of course, we know that the things that are created in the beginning, the things that were created by the word, that is, the speaking, and also by the word himself, because he was the creator. It was sent unto the children of Israel. Peter's making that claim. Not sent to the nation, but sent to the children of Israel. And preaching peace by Jesus Christ. I don't know. That peace business would be about as strange as it is now. That word, same thing, I say, ye know, which was published throughout all Judea, and began from Galilee after the baptism which John preached. How God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Ghost and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed of the devil, for God was with him. And we are witnesses of all things which he did both in the land of the Jews and in Jerusalem, whom they slew and hanged on a tree. Who did? Well, in that verse there, it says the Jews, whom they slew and hanged on a tree. I thought the Gentiles did it. Well, at Pentecost, Peter accused them of murdering the Prince of Peace, didn't he?